Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Jared Sutton, come on in here. Where'd he go?
He went to get some water.
Okay. Come on in. Jared Sutton, get some water, get some coffee. He's got a ski vest on. He's got a nice warm hat. This guy looks like he's going out on the mountain, going skiing with Nam Hu. Jared Sutton, welcome into the studio. Get yourself ready. Hold on here. Oh boy. See, you gotta understand.
Which Jake, microphone
he's
using?
Very, very high maintenance. Jake usually comes in here and warms up the seat for him. He rubs his bad shoulder, gets him ready for a almost like a pregame. He's like, Jake's like your trainer here. You got to get everything very situated before you can come on the show with us. But we have Jared Sutton, who was the subject of many profanity-laced text messages from me during the Missouri-Emporia State game. And I'm sorry, I mean, you're working on SEC Network Plus with Ben Arnett. You're trying to provide analysis of the game, and you've got me sitting there texting you.
It makes for a great off-air conversation with Ben Arnett and our producer Parker.
So oh, really?
I appreciate it.
Oh, so did you share that one specific one that I'm thinking of?
Did I? That might have. That might have brought out. Yeah.
Ben Arnett have to say about that? Well, did you get my sense of humor? I feel like that might scare him.
I think everybody gets your sense of humor.
Right. Well. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you.
I don't know if everybody
I'm gonna
gets
tell
it.
You no yeah. on that one.
Yeah.
But Jared Sutton, and of course, you know Jared Sutton because he played his high school basketball at Oak Park High School here in Kansas City. He played at Mizzou and now works as an NBA scout and works as a color commentator for SEC Network. And he called the game between Mizzou and Emporia State. And so now that everyone once again knows who you are, what was your reaction when you heard the news that Michael Porter Jr. was likely out for the year with surgery?
I was shocked. You know, at the game against Emporia State, before the game and after the game, I just asked a few people around the athletic department and around the program, and nobody really knew much of anything other than that he was seeing a specialist and that they really couldn't figure out what it was. Didn't know if it was minor, didn't know if it was serious. I was confident that he'd come back. And, you know, for Michael, he's in a different situation because obviously, you know, he's got the NBA ahead of him. It's going to be a top five pick. But again, as I've said multiple times, and I know this is kind of a vague comment, but the biggest thing with Michael that will hold him back is just injuries and this back injury that he has had. In the past, you talked about it at the Jordan Brand and the Nike Hoop Summit. He had some tightness. So I'm glad they're addressing it now for him and his future. I feel for him, though, because I know how much it meant to him to play at Missouri, to play with his brother, Jonte. You know, I thought it was, you know, kind of full circle after hearing him at SEC Media Day talk about, you know, he might not just be a one and done, and now here we are. And now his decision is going to be a lot different. I spoke to a few GMs yesterday who said that this does change the conversation a little bit because that they've had this kind of flagged as, you know, can he stay healthy? So when you talk about the NBA Combine coming up in the spring, which will be an important piece, you know, Michael will get healthy. I know he had the operation yesterday. Take some time to recoup and recover. But once those Combine conversations and take place, he's going to have to really test well with the medical teams because I think that's the next step for him. And that's the most important piece, too, of the NBA Combine. Yeah, the interview process is important, but it's really for guys and team doctors and organizations to really get their hands on guys and start to flag players.
How many different NBA teams have contacted you trying to get some information out of you about Michael Porter Jr.?
I'd say at least 12.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, you're talking about like higher ups, not stupid. Other scouts.
How many
like,
teams are in the league? 30. Yeah.
Yeah. I had
78 teams.
Wow,
in
that's
the
a
NBA
lot. It seems
now.
Like a lot,
it's
Steven.
It
seems
you know.
High.
We had the CBE Classic, obviously, here the last couple nights. I worked the Mizzou game Monday, but was at CBE last night and met with a few teams last night and then yesterday morning as well. There was a lot of questions flying around regarding Michael. A lot of questions involving Billy Preston as well that a lot of teams are interested in. So it's unfortunate. I love Michael to death. He's a great kid, and I really do know. Especially knowing his dad and calling the women's games as well with Sierra and Bree. Sierra and Bree have had knee issues as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to put that on Michael or Jonte either. But the biggest thing with that family, they're a basketball family. They're great athletes. But the injury bug is something I've always held my breath on. Even watching Michael at Tolton, because you could see how athletic he was, but he's frail. He's vegan as well, and you never know what's gonna take place with a kid at a young age.
Do you like the fact that there are several threads on message boards suggesting that if he would eat meat, then he would not have been hurt?
I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
Right. No, I'm not. But the point is, that's how crazy some fans are right now.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that by any means.
Eat a steak and maybe you'll be all right, huh? Really.
But here's a point I do want to make, because this is a conversation I had at the Combine last year with a couple guys, especially with teams that are when you make an investment in the NBA, there's only two rounds. Obviously, first round, so important, lottery picks. You're making an investment in a player to be a franchise-changing player. But we talked a lot about how this AAU circuit and the All-Star games, and a lot of these kids are playing, two games, three games, maybe a day, and they're playing every weekend, and they're playing throughout the week. And you love it that they're gym rats, and you love it that they love the game, and they want to improve, and they want to be on the highest stage. But you wonder how long this really has been going on with Michael. And if there was a moment where he should have shut it down, and it's, especially after the Jordan Brand Classic, again, you could have looked at that as being a minor situation where, he did take some time off and start to feel better. But I look at Joel Embiid and the situation when he was at Kansas when he had the back issue. And I know it was something that was taking place in December and took some time off, healed. But then when the Big 12 tournament popped up, he couldn't play in the NCAA tournament. And, in basketball, when it's your back, that once that goes and once you start having discomfort, and I had a back issue in college, sometimes that can impact your knees, ankles. It kind of works in tandem. So I'm glad they addressed it now. I'm glad Michael can, deal with this, get 100%. Obviously, it's the family's decision. I respect that and understand that completely. They want to make sure he's right for his next chapter in his life and in his career.
Okay, so here's why this is you're a good person to ask about this. So, again, you played at Mizzou, so you have the perspective of being on the basketball team. You've worked for a couple of NBA teams. You're an NBA scout. Now you're a color analyst, and so you're very familiar with both of the programs, the men's and the women's program, and what's going on and how things are done behind the scenes, which some of us don't understand. And so I'm going to read to you this passage from Dave Matter's column from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch I read a little bit earlier. And you tell me what you think of this, because this is the main discussion point right now, once the shock of Michael Porter Jr. being out for the year has dissipated just a little bit. Then we start to wonder what happened. Okay, so since Porter unexpectedly came out against Iowa State in the game's second minute, Konzo Martin and team spokesman had not disclosed any specific diagnosis from the team's medical staff. In April, Porter set out the Jordan Brand Classic All-Star Game for what was described as a sore back. Late last month, he appeared to hurt his back during a practice inside Mizzou Arena, a source confirmed, though he was cleared to start in the team's opener against Iowa State. Porter had been seen by Mizzou's medical staff since that game, but sought a second opinion outside of MU's network of doctors, sources confirmed. The team's medical staff didn't believe surgery was necessary and hoped its treatment plan would help Porter recover in time to rejoin the team at some point this season. But on Monday, while the rest of the team prepared for a game against Emporia State, Porter and his mother, Lisa Porter, flew from Columbia to Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport to visit a specialist. Until Tuesday, it was not a foregone conclusion within the program that Porter would opt for surgery, a source said. So he went to one of the best spine doctors. He serves as a spine consultant for the Dallas Cowboys, Texas Rangers, and Dallas Stars, and he's the guy that performed back surgery on Tony Romo, among many other professional athletes. So they went to Dr. Dossett in Dallas, clearly a specialist that knows what he's doing. So when they say, and maybe you don't know this, but maybe shed some light if you can, when they say the Mizzou, from the team's medical staff, they had not received any specific diagnosis, but the Mizzou medical staff thought that treatment would help, and they didn't believe surgery was necessary. When they see a medical staff, or they talk, did he see a specialist recommended by Missouri, a team doctor, the trainers? What do you think they're referring to? Because I think that is significant.
Yeah, it is significant. I would say that when Mizzou's medical staff and our head athletic trainer, Pat Beckman, who's been there for years, and Pat is fantastic. And when I'm thinking back to when I played those 4 years, you know, I can remember guys getting second opinions, but it was within the network and within the circle of the training staff and the medical doctors that are associated with Mizzou athletics.
So doctors and specialists that would be
correct
in Columbia or
yes
in this area.
And they have a lot of different, you know, third parties and outside, you know, resources and physicians that come in that are, you know, whether it be knee, ankle, back, that specialize in a specific area. They are around the athletic department, whether it be football, basketball, multiple sports. And we had team doctors, not just our athletic trainer, Pat, who travels with us, who's with us every day, and is a part of the day-to-day, but our team doctors were at every home game. You know, they were in the locker room at halftime. They were in the locker room after the game, around Pat, just if Pat needed them. I trust PB, and I trust our medical team first and foremost, because they were outstanding when I was a student-athlete. Again, I had a back issue that when I was a sophomore that was really bad in preseason, and trusted Pat. Everybody trusted Pat. It was a great relationship that we had with him. So the fact that Michael, you know, went to get this second opinion, that's where it's confusing for me. That's where it's confusing for a lot of people around the program, and why I didn't really know what was going on. I know you'd asked me, and a lot of people had asked me what's going on, and I really didn't know. I felt. And especially being at the Iowa State game, I will tell you that in pregame warmups, he did not look right. He didn't. I told my brother that because I didn't know if it was just a lack of energy or he was nervous, but he did not look normal. And then in the first 2 minutes, when he got that offensive rebound, what he's used to doing is just catching and going up explosive and dunking the basketball. And it's almost like he shied away from the rim and shot it off the backboard and made it.
I was talking about this with Nate a little bit earlier.
Steven gave me the whole timeline of it.
Missouri fans now have gone back and watched this thing over and over again.
Right.
And to see, okay.
On the anniversary of it.
I was always going to say that, so you know what, I'm not going to say
that. Yeah, bad analogy, but you know, but we've broken down that film a million times to see everything. It's the only reason you use the analogy.
But so I you watch it, and being there, and someone pointed out, and I was reading at PowerMizzou.com, and then talking to people that were there at the game, like, do you remember anything? And I've had like four or five different people, you know, he had like a windmill dunk, and he was dunking the ball, and then after one of the dunks, it kind of looked like maybe he came down funny or something, and then he came back through again, and just kind of like threw the ball up there, or just laid it up, and the student section kind of jokingly booed, all boo, you know.
Right.
And then he went over and had a conversation with his dad. He was talking to Konzo that he's in the game. So then I'm watching the replay last night just to see. You're exactly right. He's kind of moving gingerly. He gets that offensive rebound, puts it back up.
Yep.
And he's walking down. And then I think it was after Iowa State made a basket, you see him kind of motion over to Konzo, like, you know, get me out of the game. Konzo goes, gets a sub. The sub's checking in. He comes out of the game. And then the last thing, and maybe we're reading too much into it, but that's what we do. Like at the 5 minute mark, they show his mom and his sister, and she looks visibly upset.
Yeah, I went back and watched the tape because I, for scouting purposes, I always go back and watch every game that I'm at just to see if I miss anything. And that is something that jumped out at me. It did. It was. And again, you know, we're looking after the fact, so it's easy to look into that.
But people were talking about. I remember after, it's like. Because everyone was trying to figure. Remember, for the first half of the game, no one like, why is he not in the game? What's going on? And she looked like her kid had just got hurt or something.
Yeah, and I mean to go back to your question, I mean that's why it's so shocking for me is because I saw this kid at Pro Day, and you know there was a similar play like the one he scored on in Iowa State where the ball bounced off the backboard or bounced off the rim, hit the backboard, but he was the one that shot it and he followed up his miss and his head was above the rim. He caught it and dunked it. And, you know, he's just that much of an explosive athlete. So he just didn't look athletic in that play, and he never looks that way. So that's when I could tell something was wrong. But I thought it would be back tightness, back spasms, you know, something that could be addressed with rest and time and kind of some time away from the floor. But clearly there was something more there and the nerve damage there. So
well, I just want to say this again. To be clear, this when people have this issue, these herniated discs, there is no clear-cut, this is what you do. It's not like when you tear your ACL.
Everybody's different.
And they say, well, you have a torn ACL, we're going to replace it. Now, even then, you have choices to make. Am I going to use the hamstring tendon graft? If I'm going to use the patellar tendon graft? Am I going to use a cadaver? There are choices to be made. But for the most part, if you have a torn ACL, we're going to replace it. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty clear-cut thing. When you have people with back injuries and these herniated discs, everyone's different. And there are different options treatment-wise. Sometimes they'll say, you know what, if we can avoid back surgery at all costs, let's avoid it. Let's see if therapy, because sometimes if you do the right amounts of therapy, which involves strengthening your back, improving your flexibility, things like that, it can relieve the pressure. Because what's happening here, and my father-in-law went through this with his back, he had no back pain whatsoever. It felt like someone was stabbing him in the side of the knee with an ice pick was the way he described it to me. It was his knee. Mm-hmm. That was killing him. But his back, it wasn't his where the actual injury occurred, it wasn't hurting him because it was the pressure on the nerve, that sciatic nerve that goes down your leg, was debilitating. And so he had to have surgery. So the point being that there are times when they will say, look, through the proper therapy, we can release the pressure that is on your knee, on your nerve right now, and the pain will go away. And like you said, Stephen, there's no doubt they've probably tried that, and it probably was working to the point where Porter could do windmill dunks in the middle of warm-ups without any issues, and then all of a sudden he re-aggravates it. And so my point is, and like you talked about the medical staff, it's not necessarily that they don't trust that the medical staff at Missouri doesn't have their best interest at heart or any of that. But those guys, they're like their mindset when they go do their job is
yeah.
Jarrett Sutton, you have an injured back. How can I get you healthy enough to get you back on the court and do what you love to do? That it's not just about helping the university, but, hey, you want to play basketball. How can I help you recover?
Right.
And there are ways where you can help a guy work his way through this injury. But the Porters, as they should, are not just thinking about how can I get back on the court, but long term. Let's put it this way.
You got to think about what's best for the kid in his future.
You weren't really thinking, maybe you were, but you probably weren't thinking, well, I might be going to the draft next year and playing the NBA.
I probably definitely was not thinking that.
Okay.
But yes.
So you're thinking, how can I get to back on the court to help my college basketball career?
Right.
You know, if Michael Porter Jr. was in your situation, I wonder if he might not have thought, okay, let's keep working on this and see if there's a way that I can play, and then in the offseason I have the surgery.
Right.
But when you're a guy who's ticketed to be a top five pick, you kind of have to think differently.
Agreed.
And you talked about, well, does this change his draft status? No doubt it's going to be a red flag, but if he still is – somebody's going to take a chance on
Absolutely.
That athletic
no
ability.
Question.
He can't take the chance of going back to college and injuring it again because the more injuries he has, the more it hurts his draft stock.
And one of the things I got to give Konzo credit to is, you know, with Mike Anderson and with Frank Haith, particularly with Mike – If Pat Beckman cleared you, if you went into the training staff room and, you know, you had some, you know, some nagging injuries, but PB said you were good to go and Pat was great at, you know, making sure the coaches knew that, hey, he can't practice today or he's going to be out 2-3 days or, you know, shorter, longer, whatever it might be. But if you were cleared, you played and you practiced and you were mm-hmm. at full speed and you were expected to go full speed. Again, it's a little bit different, you know, at that time, you know, I guess Damari was in that conversation of the NBA. Nobody was really talking, obviously, lottery, top five pick, best player in the country, things like that. It's a little different conversation. But I got to give Konzo credit because as a coach, you know, you're judged off wins and losses. You got this great player. It would be easy to think, you know, we got to get this guy right and healthy. And the fact that he's taking it as, no, this has got to be the best decision for the kid. And they put him in the scorebook. And they had to start him against Iowa State, and he immediately pulled him out. And they're doing what's right, and what's the right decision for Michael.
All right, so what do you think of this scenario? Because I've seen a couple of people, express that they think this is what happened. And I think this sounds like this could be true. I mean, it's all speculation until we know the true story. But this is a back problem that has been there. They've known about it. And so people that are asking, well, if you know, rehab and physical therapy, if that was an option, why did they immediately just decide to go with surgery? Well, maybe they've seen other specialists and seen other doctors, and they've opted for physical therapy, and they've opted for rehab. And up to this point, he's gotten better each time he's done it. He's been able to work through it until this time. It was too much, and they decide, okay, you know what? Let's go talk to this other specialist. And this other specialist says, you should probably do this surgery now.
And I bet that Pat Beckman and the Mizzou training staff and doctors met with Michael, met with his family, had a meeting about this and discussed what's the best decision for Michael. And I have to think Pat probably said we should get a second opinion. I mean, and I'm sure the team cleared him and couldn't find anything. But if it's still nagging him, let's get a second opinion. Let's see what's going on. Let's go see a specialist. It's just unfortunate the news that breaks is that he has the surgery and he has the operation. But
you know, I think Konzo Martin has to approach this the way that you said earlier, though, because it's a long play for Konzo Martin. If you want other kids with pro potential to come play for you, you have to, you know, you don't want word to come out that you don't have the best interests of the kids' pro prospects at heart.
Well, let's just get right to this. His brother's on the team,
yeah.
Right?
And his brother might be. I mean, okay, who are the two most talented players on that team right now?
Tillman.
Thank God he reclassified.
And Jonte Porter,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And oh, by the way, sitting next to you is his dad.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
That's a little bit of an interesting dynamic, is it not?
That's the thing I've told Mizzou fans, too, that are, you know, yesterday was a dark day, obviously. Mizzou fans are upset, as they should be. But the reality is, think about what Michael's done since he even committed. I mean, he gets Jeremiah Tillman, Blake Harris comes, his brother reclassifies. You know, we got commitments down the pipeline, too, as well. And that's all stemming off of, obviously, new coach Konzo's great at what he does. He's a great recruiter. But it's understanding that Michael Porter, the number one player in the country, chose to come back to Missouri, and it's really, I think, rebuilt the pipeline for recruiting purposes in the state of Missouri.
He helped
and
the program.
That to me is cannot be lost if Michael Porter doesn't play another second in a Missouri uniform.
He reignited the fan base. You've got a couple of players there that would not be there if not for Michael Porter Jr. And Konzo Martin has used that and his tremendous ties to his hometown of East St. Louis to bring in players this year and now next year that would not have considered Mizzou. And so just bottom line is this, and I said this at the beginning of the show, if somebody would have pulled you aside, Jarrett, and said, and the day after Kim Anderson gets fired, okay, here's what's going to happen. Your new head coach is going to be able to establish a pipeline to St. Louis and get recruits out of St. Louis that have turned their nose up at Mizzou for years and years and years. And next year, you're going to have a 5-star recruit, a 4-star recruit, an impressive young point guard that's going to transfer in from or decommit from Washington and come to Mizzou. And then you're going to have another 4-star St. Louis kid signed up for 2018. You would have said, really?
Yeah.
Well, sign me up now. But that's all overshadowed by the unbelievably disappointing situation that we have with Michael Porter Jr. And I'm not telling Mizzou fans not to be upset. It sucks. I couldn't wait to watch that kid play. I'm still upset about it. But perspective.
Yeah.
The program is much, much better now because of Michael Porter Jr.'s decision to try to play for Mizzou.
And, Stephen, look at it this way. When they played Iowa State on Friday, when Michael got subbed out after whatever it was, 100 seconds, 2 minutes, whatever it was, they still kept the foot on the gas pedal and beat Iowa State. Now, Iowa State's not going to be the same team they've been in the past, but they won without Michael. And I know they haven't shot it well the last two games, but I'm watching Creighton last night against Baylor. They shot 6% from three in the second half. And Creighton's probably was the better team than Baylor, but they just didn't play well that night. My point is that this Missouri basketball team is better and it's more improved already. Now, they got to continue to keep improving. They got to start making shots, and they have to have somebody step up. I keep saying Jordan Barnett. Jordan Barnett did not play well against Emporia State. Was kind of a no-show.
And Robertson's got to shoot the three.
And yeah, so they do have some things that they got to work on and improve, and we'll see if they do that in the Advocare. But the reality is they played really well against Iowa State. You can see that they have guys that can make shots, and they will make shots. They just they have been in a slump. They got to get out of that.
So you called the game against Emporia State. Were they? Was that a team that was distracted, and maybe the wind was out of their sails because they found out that Porter Jr. was out for the year, and maybe that was, I mean, they didn't play well.
No.
Looking back, do you think they knew, and that was
it's possible
one of the reasons why they looked so flat?
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not 100% sure if that's really the case, but it's definitely a possibility. But I think, too, if Michael hasn't been practicing, he didn't travel to Utah, I think probably there was some conversations already within the locker room and within guys that knew.
I think everyone knew on Saturday night.
Yeah, I could see that as well. But again, I say that too because they had no energy starting that game. They didn't start the game like you would expect them to. They weathered the storm. They won a difficult game where they didn't shoot it well. So there's some positives to take. But yeah, the energy in that building and the energy because of that team, I do think there's possibly some similarities there with Michael and the injury.
All right, let's take a break. We've got Jarrett Sutton in studio back after this on Sports Radio 810
Welcome
WHB.
Back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you very much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jarrett Sutton talking some college basketball. All right. Moving forward now. Oh, boy.
I'm all over the place,
man. What's going on over here?
What's going on over here?
See, this is what happens when Nate harasses you the entire commercial break about trying to join a basketball team. Now, were you recruiting? Is that legal?
I was recruiting. A little bit. Light recruiting.
The entire commercial break, you wore him out, and you never asked the question.
I did not wear him out. I asked him one question, and then we talked for a little bit.
He was tapping out. He looked at me for help, but I couldn't give it to
See,
him.
See, you're characterizing this unfairly.
Drake! Drake's laughing uncontrollably.
He was engaged in a conversation with me.
You were engaged.
And I was taking your advice about how I was approaching trying to get information on the Billy Preston thing, that I need to butter people up a little bit more.
Ask him the damn question
so I
now.
Would you like to play on my buddy's City League team every once in a while? Like, you know, as a fill-in or anything? What's your schedule like on Monday nights?
So one of your guests you have on, CJ, Moore from formerly Bleacher Report, now of Athletica, I'm on the rec team with him as well. So maybe multiple teams possibly.
You play what nights do you play?
Tuesday nights.
So Monday nights are open.
Nights are open. That's right.
Did you see
double
the look
duty.
On his face?
You
when
leave
he said
our
that?
Guests
like, oh,
alone.
No, I just opened myself up for this. Look, it's not even my team. I just played as a fill-in. But they asked me if I had any buddies that would want to play, and I thought about hitting you up on Monday, but then I thought, you know,
I could fill in.
Okay,
I could fill in.
Thought about hitting you up on Monday. No, leave me alone to text him profanity laced messages during his game. It's my job. But then, I knew he was him out there watching. Yeah.
I may have passed along your text as well that night to my Mizzou alum friend group, and it got rave reviews.
It did it
Let's
really,
just say
yeah.
That. Just so you know.
See, I feel like there's an opportunity for me here with some of the connections. It just dawned on me because my buddy said, hey, I need somebody to play on Monday. And by the way, it went for double figures in case you didn't
just throw
ask
that in
you.
There. Just
yeah,
slide that
but,
in there.
But he said, we need a couple of extra guys. We're really short on numbers. So I started thinking of, like, who could I show up with that will impress these guys, you know? So I thought about texting you, but I knew you guys had the game that night. I texted Connor Tehan, he said he couldn't do it Monday, but keep me in mind in the future.
If you want to wow some people, you show up with Greg Gurley.
Well,
that's exactly who
I'll
you
have to show up.
I
texted
factor.
Gurley. I said, hey, you got any interest in some C-League basketball tonight? I cannot read for you his response on the air, but it started with, I would rather.
Right. I would be there in
I
a
would rather
heartbeat.
Give blank a blank while blank was blanking in blank, right. blank, blank. You know, so I was like, okay, well, so I'll take that as a note
okay.
for tonight.
Here's the text I sent Jarrett that he says, I can't read it
But
all.
The point is, I feel like I could put together a ringer of a team where I'm just like the seventh guy off the bench. I could get Sutton. Tehan, maybe, you know, Tyrell Reed comes on the show sometimes.
Let me get a ruling from the Drake. You tell
Kling
me
scale.
If this is inappropriate to send to Jarrett while he's serving as color commentator for a Mizzou broadcast. Well, I texted it, whatever. If they take one more blanking three-pointer without passing the blanking basketball into the blanking post. I'm going to blank live on 38 The Spot tomorrow morning. I can't tell you what some of those blanks are, but some of them.
That's spot on.
Point is,
that's spot on.
I just wanted them to feed the ball into the post.
You were right, too.
Their players were so much taller than Emporia State, and I felt like they were 1 of 16 from 3, they should probably shut down the outside.
And we weren't making three-point shots. So, by the way, I got to go back to Nate for a second. So, two things. One, when I called the NAIA National Championship,
right,
you were brought on court.
Oh, that's right.
And the jump shot was pure.
Yeah.
And I got to give you credit there.
Yeah.
Number two, what was your shoe game in the pickup? Because you got a strong shoe game. You got the Jordan. What'd you rock? KDs?
So I didn't wear any of my old school J's because I don't want to scuff those up. So I got when I played in the Bill Self Fantasy Camp 2 years ago, they gave us brand new Adidas shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the model is, what you call them or anything, but so they're a year old, but I've only worn them like three times.
Okay.
So I was ready to roll. I hit 2 3-pointers in the game. Hit one fadeaway baseline, like 10-footer, and then a layup that gave me my 10 points.
Do you know how people don't want to hear about your fantasy football team? This is worse.
Jared seems interested. It's my fault.
I let him down there. I did ask the question.
You know? I'm not going to blame you for this one.
I took us off path.
That's all right. All right. That's all right. And so, okay, I want to ask you about all the local schools, and we'll start with Missouri so we'll move on. Okay, give me your readjusted, realistic expectations for what their ceiling is this year without Michael Porter Jr.
Well, I still think, look, you can't let this situation control you, first and foremost. You have to control the situation. That starts with coaching. That starts with leadership. Are they going to take a hit? Probably, yeah. I don't think the expectation drops off all that much. Because I do think, I'm really impressed with Cassius Robertson. I'm really impressed with Blake Harris. I told you guys this a couple weeks ago when you asked me what Missouri's starting five should be, and I said
make him the point guard.
Blake Harris,
let it go.
Put him at the point guard position. Let him grow. He's going to make mistakes, but he is a natural pass-first point guard. I love Blake Harris. I think he's a ball hawk defensively, too. Obviously, Jonte speaks for himself. If Jordan Barnett can play the way he is capable of playing, because he has NBA athleticism, it's in between his ears. And what I loved most about Jordan Barnett this season was he didn't have to be the guy because Michael's going to be your first option. And you saw it against Iowa State, just kind of played free. He's getting tight again. If he can play the way he's capable of being, and Jeremiah can stay out of foul trouble, and that is the biggest positive for me against Emporia State, was Jeremiah Tillman. You could tell they have worked with him on move your feet, keep your hands high, and don't pick up cheap fouls. Then he gets a technical foul and a couple cheap ones.
He was out of foul trouble, and they were just talking about that. You guys were just talking about that, and then he gets a technical. Just for saying something to, did you see Konzo's face when he got the technical?
Well, it was Cassius Robertson's face that got me.
One of those. I told you that I'm looking forward to Konzo's angry looks at players when they walk to the bench. He's like, you know, like, really? Is that where this third foul is going to come from? And so it was wonderful.
Yep.
And so tournament team yes or no?
They get in the playing game. You know, the SEC is going to be tough, though. I mean, it is a tough league. There's probably 8 to 10 teams that you just don't know what you're going to get.
It's much improved.
It is a much improved league, so that's going to be tough. But the schedule in non-conference, and if they can win the game against Illinois and Bragging Rights and get themselves set up for a role in the league play, again, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. So we'll see where this team's at come league play.
Kansas, last night, Mike Davis, former Indiana and UAB coach, said after the game that he's seen a lot of basketball. And if Kansas plays like that, they'll be cutting down the net. Is Kansas a legitimate national championship? Not even Final Four, national championship contender.
I think it depends on if Billy Preston comes back. I think he's a big piece for them. You know,
what are you hearing?
I have asked a lot of different people, and I get mixed comments on if he's going to play at Kansas this year. I just feel like, since it's such a hush-hush issue, and since it is a compliance issue looking into the financial side of it, it has me nervous. I'll just say that. It has me nervous. It has a lot of people around NBA circuit a little nervous as well. That's how I'll answer that. But when I look at KU, you got Devontae Graham, who Big 12 preseason player of the year pick. He's a stud. I watched him against, Kentucky. And he actually didn't play that well in that game. Svi Mykhailiuk was the big piece. Svi and Devontae are the two biggest pieces. They have to be consistent throughout the year. And Azubuike is a beast. He's got to stay healthy. And what Hootie's done with Azubuike, changing his body.
Unbelievable.
Footwork, unbelievable.
She's amazing.
She's an absolute stud. So I like Kansas. It's so early to say, are they a national championship contender? I think they're a Final Four contender. But there's a lot of good teams out there. I'm not going to say that yet. It depends on the Billy Preston situation. But LeGerald Vick is improved. I really like LeGerald. And Svi Mykhailiuk, and I think Garrett's going to be a big piece of this team as well off the bench.
All right, Kansas State, they have not lost yet, but the competition goes up a notch. They'll be taking on, in this Las Vegas Invitational, Arizona State,
mm-hmm.
and then possibly Xavier if they can beat Arizona State. We'll know a lot more. It'll be easier to predict after that, but do you consider Kansas State a tournament team?
Man, after the inconsistencies they had last year, I do think there's something to be said for going to the NCAA tournament. And although it was a play-in game, they got a win. I always think that rollover effect to the next season, and you got a lot of guys returning from that team. I like that about Kansas State. Dean Wade is an important piece of that team. Xavier Sneed is a freak athlete. He can do a lot of things. Barry Brown, big-time scorer. And Camus Stokes. So that four, that's a great nucleus. It's a young nucleus. I love when Kansas State goes through Dean Wade. I think he's so fundamentally sound. I think he's an underrated big man in the Big 12. So are they an NCAA tournament team? We'll find out. I mean, we'll find out in this tournament. They haven't really played anybody yet. I want to see what they do in this early preseason tournament. And then are they going to have the same hiccups that they had last year in Big 12 play? They can't have those losses where you sit there shaking your head going, how did they lose that game? And sometimes just not really showing up, not really having energy. Is that going to be the same team in January and February? That's what you have to you make the NCAA tournament. You have to have a good non-conference schedule, but you've got to be playing your best basketball in February.
And will they win on the play hard chart, is Nate?
Well, that's
it's always
that's
the question
important.
Nate's
that's
looking
important.
To answer. Wichita State plays Notre Dame tonight.
Yeah.
Wichita State is number 6 in the nation. Is that? And some people are suggesting it's too high. Is that too high, or are they that good?
They're that good. They did not play. They did not play well against Cal. They're 12 deep. I mean, they can play 12 guys.
Look how mad Nate is now. Look at his face.
Well,
you've.
I went and watched him play. It was against College of Charleston a couple weeks ago, and Landry Shamet's back from injury.
I love him.
Kansas City native. Going to be a first-round pick.
I love him.
He's a stud. Marcus McDuffie has not played, and he is another guy that is coming back from a foot injury. I think it'll still be 2-3 weeks before you see him back.
But when they get him back, look out.
Look out. And one of the things I told Greg Marshall this, and one of the big pieces of why he's such a great coach
Did he complain about Nate when you were talking to him by any chance?
Oh, he did not. Okay. He did not say anything about Nate.
See, getting better.
That's disrespectful.
Yeah.
But didn't even mention me.
But one of the best things I can say about Greg Marshall is the fact that he develops players. And you look at some of those guys, I mean, Shaq, their big center, where he's come as a freshman. And then Darryl Willis, a guy that – when he was a freshman, I just thought, man, he's just a long athlete. And now you're seeing him catch the ball. They run offense through him. He's attacking. He can shoot it. Great perimeter play as well. I love Austin Reeves. He comes off the bench, but he's just a really fundamentally sound guard that gives him great minutes, and they all defend. And so he's got a great thing going there, and they got a real chance to get back to that Final Four. I think they're more athletic and have more depth than the 2013 Final Four team.
Why, you son of a boy, oh boy. That's not a shocker. Get it?
Wow.
And finally, this question for both of you. Baylor just won the Hall of Fame
mm-hmm.
Classic here in Kansas City. They beat Wisconsin, and they beat Creighton. Do you think, and they play Xavier, they play Wichita State coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Are they the second best team in the Big 12? I know Wichita State, or West Virginia was picked, right, by the coaches to be number 2 and then mm-hmm. TCU number 3. Is Baylor actually the second best team in the Big 12?
Right now, yeah. I would say so. Texas Tech is got to be in that conversation. I think Coach Beard has done a great job, and they got a nice win against Northwestern. But, I think so. Watching them last night, Joe Luell Seal is improved. He's their long athletic center. He was just raw last year and kind of a shot blocker. But he's developed in a couple areas of his game I really like. Terry Mastin, I think, is a big piece for that team. Mata LeCompte is a veteran guard, shot maker, didn't shoot it well last night. But King McClure was big for them last night. He came off the bench, did a really good job. Jake Lindsey's a veteran. So they got some good pieces. They got, some, again, guys returning that have experience. But I got to give Scott Drew credit. I mean, last night, I don't think they necessarily played all that well, and they found a way to win, and here they are 5-0 again. And so they always kind of have this run at the beginning where they've had really good success in preseason tournaments, and they showed good toughness. They were down. Creighton kind of could put the foot on the gas pedal. They changed to a zone, and Creighton couldn't shoot the ball at all in the second half. They had good looks, just didn't make shots. So I actually think Creighton, I'm really high on Creighton, even though they lost last night. I think Creighton's got a really good chance to make some noise in the Big East. But, you know, I'd watch out for Baylor, especially if Lou Alcile can stay out of foul trouble and play consistently as he played last night. And Terry Mastin gives them the production. I think he's a little out of shape, but I think once league play comes and once he continues to keep improving, I think Baylor's got a really good chance.
Yeah, they're going to end up having the better non-con resume than West Virginia, I think. You know, West Virginia got that terrible loss to, and when I say terrible, I just mean by, like, they got spanked by Texas A&M.
Yep.
But
who's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, if I would stick with the prediction that West Virginia will finish above Baylor in the standings, because
you've taken a real liking to Scott Drew, though, I feel like.
I have. No, it's been a slow... I've slowly warmed to Scott Drew over the years.
He's buttered you up over the years, Jesse.
But I think that, for one thing, I think he's evolved as a coach.
Agreed.
You know, the thing that I hated the most about him back, you know, the Eddie Haskell stuff where none of the other coaches liked him was kind of what started my disdain, so to speak, for him. And then watching them play zero defense for a few years there, it was almost appalling.
Back when they had Perry Jones,
yeah,
when I was at Mizzou, they lacked. They had also Quincy Miller.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of studs.
Yeah, but they were so soft. I mean,
yeah,
as a team, they just were so soft. And I don't think they are that. And they haven't been for some time since they got the Rico Gathers of the world and stuff. They started actually becoming. I know they still play that zone, but my point for a while now has been. It's become a popular thing to say, well, Baylor going to Baylor. When they lose some game they're not supposed to lose, when they mismanage a game down the stretch. And he still has some of those flaws. But my point was, you know, Fred Hoiberg was the mayor up in Iowa, and we all loved him for good reason. He did amazing things. Iowa State would go lose games just like Baylor would.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go lose a two-point game at Texas Tech when there was no way in the world Iowa State should be losing to Texas Tech. They played no defense, you know, those types of things. But nobody wanted to crush you know, the mayor for that or
yep.
the other coaches. So Scott Drew's been unfairly criticized for a while, but I will say this. You give me a Bob Huggins coach team that's going to be hard-nosed defensively every single game, a guy like Javon Carter to run the show every single game, that team will grind out more results through the course of a gauntlet of a double round robin better than Baylor will, in my opinion. That's why they'll finish slightly ahead of Baylor in the standings. That's my prediction.
And think about this, too. I like that prediction because I like Javon Carter, and you want to talk about toughness. Look no further than West Virginia.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we look at Baylor, you know, they've had good success in the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
And when you know, I played at Missouri, Baylor kind of had this stigma of they just get a bunch of athletes.
Right.
And they can get recruits. They don't do anything with it. Well, now he's winning games with guys that – probably aren't the best. I mean, he's playing Jake Lindsey a bunch of minutes, and he's got veteran presence and guys that know their role. And I agree with you. It just seems like he's had a little bit of a transformation from a coaching perspective. And I did like what he said. I stayed for his postgame presser last night, and he talked about leadership, and he talked about how we have guys now. You know, he's had some one-and-dones and guys that leave, and now he's got that leadership piece. And he touched on that about how that's a big piece of why they have had success in preseason tournaments is because they get off on the right foot because of that senior leadership, because they have a drive to prove themselves. So I think that's got to be said for Scott Drew. I have to throw in a positive for you, by the way, because press conference starts last night, Scott Drew, it was almost like he was looking in my general direction, but he goes, you know, we've played a lot of games in Sprint Center, we've played some championship games, and they just haven't really gone that well for us.
Right.
And I thought, oh, thanks for giving me a great memory and close this day on a positive note.
That's
I appreciate
right.
it, Scott Drew. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
You as well. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
I don't know why your mother doesn't send breakfast casserole anymore to us, but
I'm gonna. She's probably listening and probably just going right to the kitchen.
Did I make her mad?
No.
Okay.
No. Not at all.
Did Nate make her mad? Probably.
No.
That would be my guess.
No, because Nate's got the connection with my dad.
Yeah,
with,
the Strawberry Hill connection.
Strawberry Hill connection.
If he needs some povetitza bread,
okay,
for the holidays.
What if I need it?
I know some people.
Okay.
So just you know.
He does.
He's ignoring me. I just.
We're getting back to the buttering people up, you know, yeah.
No, you have to be nicer to me.
Butter me up.
He's trying to. Yeah,
you butter me up. Jarrett, no, seriously, happy Thanksgiving,
yeah,
man. And,
yeah, you too, guys.
And we'll talk to you again real soon. That's Jarrett Sutton.
And I'll be hitting you up for, you know, City League basketball here in the near future.
I'm going to text Connor and just kind of recruit everybody.
Yeah, let's put a ringer team together and I can just
Here I use a basketball term. Go ahead and use a block on him.
The glue guy.
And back after this with Gary Lezak on WHB.